more likely we're going to see regulatory referrals from OFAC, BIS, and DDTC, but it's not going to necessarily be a referral process. It's going to be that there's going to be an investigation that's initiated. DOJ may learn about it. It could be from a regulatory referral, but frankly, there's a very delicate balance here on voluntary disclosures. If you voluntarily disclose to OFAC, do you also disclose to DOJ? Do you voluntarily disclose to BIS at Commerce? Do you also voluntarily disclose to the Justice Department?
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. Today, we're going to talk about the coming corporate sanctions enforcement storm. And I wish I had the Doors song to play in the background here, Riders in the Storm. Anyway, I know I sound like a broken record. I've repeated this over and over, and I'll keep saying it because it's coming. And that's the Justice Department's white-collar criminal enforcement is about to take a dramatic turn towards corporate sanctions and export control enforcement. Now, while white-collar criminal enforcement in general has been trending down, and we had a sort of uneven year from the DOJ in terms of the FCPA, what we're going to see this year is, in 2024, a sort of return to aggressive enforcement. And we're going to see it focused on what are called national security issues, such as sanctions and export controls. And DOJ has been warning about this. They've planned this, and they're putting resources in place to make it clear to companies and individuals that criminal enforcement is about to arrive against corporations in particular. We've already seen several examples of what aggressive sanctions enforcement will look like. And it's been called by Lisa Monaco, the Deputy Attorney General, the new FCPA. But basically, it's going to include these elements: large penalties, hundreds of millions, even reaching billions in more egregious cases, reward for voluntary disclosures, criminal indictments or deferred or non-prosecution agreements with cooperation, potential assignment of independent compliance monitors, and parallel regulatory resolutions with OFAC or Department of Commerce, Bureau of Industry and Security, or the Defense Department Trade Control Office, DDTC, related to ITAR. We'll also see enhanced compliance remediation requirements and individual criminal enforcement cases with indictments. And this is something that it's clear DOJ wants to send a message, and they put in place the resources, and in particular, the hiring and assignment of 25 new federal prosecutors to the National Security Division under the supervision of a corporate initiative leader. In other words, a supervisor whose job it is to bring sanctions cases against corporate entities akin to the sort of model that's been used for FCPA enforcement, where you pair with the regulatory agency and then coordinate on civil and criminal resolutions. So like other enforcement areas, DOJ has a variety of sources for initiating enforcement actions in this area. For example, voluntary disclosures that may come in. There is a voluntary disclosure policy in the National Security Division, whereby if you voluntarily disclose, remediate, and cooperate, there is a presumption of a declination. Now, that doesn't mean there wouldn't be a forfeiture of payment for illegal profits or anything like that. More likely, we're going to see regulatory referrals from OFAC, BIS, and DDTC, but it's not going to necessarily be a referral process. It's going to be that there's going to be an investigation that's initiated. DOJ may learn about it. It could be from a regulatory referral, but frankly, There's a very delicate balance here on voluntary disclosures. If you voluntarily disclose to OFAC, do you also disclose to DOJ? Do you voluntarily disclose to BIS at Commerce? Do you also voluntarily disclose to the Justice Department? There also will be a continuing source for sanctions. Cases comes from referrals from global financial institutions that flag transactions for potential sanctions violations because of their own regulations and regulatory requirements, and they're being subject to sanctions. Four is going to be international intelligence and law enforcement relationships that have been expanded in response to the Russia and Iran sanctions programs. Cooperating witnesses in prior cases and competitors who learn of illegal conduct. And BIS has specifically urged people to report competitors who they believe are in violation of the Export Administration regulations to earn capital that you then can use in the case that your company gets in trouble as well. And finally are going to be your whistleblowers and disgruntled employees who oftentimes end up reporting criminal violations or civil violations or sanctions or export controls problems. In the next few years, I think that sanctions and export control enforcement will resemble FCPA enforcement. The model for DOJ corporate enforcement is well established through FCPA, healthcare fraud, and other priorities. Now, two examples of cases that we've seen. DOJ resolved two significant sanctions cases in the last few years, which gives us an indication and sort of a model for how they're going to approach these new cases that are in the hopper right now. While the Binance cryptocurrency fraud case from last year resulted in a $4.3 billion resolution and included sanctions violations penalties of nearly $1 billion, the most important example from last year was the British American Tobacco case and the SAP case from 2 years before that, from 2021, which shows how DOJ's sanctions-focused enforcement strategy is going to play out. In the British American Tobacco case, DOJ and OFAC collected $629 million for British American Tobacco's long-running scheme to sell cigarettes to North Korean customers. BAT set up a fake joint venture partner, pretended to divest its interest in a North Korean business, and engaged in numerous illegal transactions with North Korean customers as a continuing source of income. BAT's strategy was executed with the knowledge and complicity of senior BAT executives. Now, we may see senior executives getting charged, but on the other hand, there may be statute of limitations issues with regard to the five-year requirement. OFAC achieved its largest penalty of $508 million for a non-financial institution, and DOJ charged three individuals who facilitated the transactions, but we haven't seen any BAT officials who were charged, and I don't think we will. In the SAP case, which was in 2021, DOJ reached an $8 million settlement for SAP's long-running scheme of providing downloads of SAP software and updates to customers and distributors in Iran. SAP engaged in extensive remediation and voluntarily disclosed its illegal conduct. In today's environment, SAP would be lucky to receive a resolution at less than $100 million. For its illegal activities, in my view. So DOJ's initiative is going to arrive with a splash. You know they're going to have some big announcement of a case that will be an indication of, here it is, this is our initiative, we warned you. And one possibility that I see is Seagate's blatant violation of Huawei export controls. BIS already reached its largest administrative penalty in 2023 of $300 million against Seagate. DOJ's absence from the enforcement action was conspicuously noted. Seagate's conduct was willful and blatant. They knowingly entered into a legal business with Huawei, providing hard disk drives, despite the fact that its competitors publicly announced they were discontinuing all business with Huawei because of the new sanctions. Seagate's senior leadership made the calculated cost-benefit analysis, which was they would be the exclusive supplier to Huawei, earn $1.1 billion in that exclusive relationship, and then the trade-off would be to be the victim or the subject of an enforcement action. Well, $300 million for earning $1.1 billion. and their decision reflected that calculated desire for profits. What they didn't count on is that DOJ may follow up with hundreds of millions of dollars of penalties and could impose certain real requirements as to sanctions, and also even stretching into Seagate's ability to export through BIS licensing procedures or Seagate's ability to engage in government contracts to the extent they are involved in that as well. So Seagate's blatant disregard for the Huawei sanctions also will find political support from Capitol Hill on both sides of the aisle, which has been critical of Seagate's conduct. So now we're going to see this splash, and I guess my broken record continues on and on and on with the need for preparing for the storm and preparing your compliance program in the sanctions and export control area. You have to be mindful here of the need to enhance your programs. It is not just simply a screen and done, one and done type of program. There has to be more with regard to that. Even after several companies have been the subjects of these aggressive enforcement actions, corporate boards, senior risk managers, and senior executives, when they are the subject then of an enforcement action, typically turn to the chief compliance officer and say, "What happened? Why did we get in trouble? Why didn't we have an effective sanctions compliance program, for example?" And I know this scenario is going to play out again and again in the corporate governance world. Now, the problem that I have here is that no one in the business world can claim they are surprised. DOJ has made it clear repeatedly its intention over the last 2 years, and the new focus is not just because of the Russia sanctions program and the war in Ukraine. Rather, DOJ's new focus reflects the clear linkage of corporate criminal conduct and national security threats. Companies that engage in sanctions violations jeopardize our country's national security and foreign policy objectives. The connection is inextricable, and DOJ has realized the need to bring the hammer down in this area. Luckily, companies should know how to build effective sanctions compliance, and they can rely upon their guidance that's been out there, because there's been a lot of guidance from DOJ, and there is also from OFAC. And I always say, look, this is not rocket science. Start with the Justice Department's Evaluation of Corporate Compliance Programs, its third edition in March 2023, and the National Security Division's Voluntary Disclosure Policy, and then add to the mix the excellent guidance from the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Asset Control, a framework for sanctions compliance commitments. Further, OFAC has a lengthy record of sanctions compliant enforcement settlements that outline a variety of compliance lessons learned and best practices for remediation and overall compliance foundations. But the basic five elements are there for every sanctions compliance program, and I'd urge you to take a look at these and double check. Build, it doesn't take that much. This is not as big a program as an anti-corruption compliance program, depending upon the sophistication of your products and whether or not you're involved in dual use items, which would require a BIS type of export control program, or military items under the ITAR. But with regard to sanctions enforcement, we have five basic elements. One, senior management commitment. Two, risk assessment. Three, internal controls. Four, monitoring, testing, and auditing. And five, training. There's nothing surprising in these five elements, and they dovetail neatly with DOJ's more extensive evaluation of corporate compliance programs. Both provide more than enough guidance for companies to fashion their own program. From my perspective, here are my top five deficiencies that companies need to address. These are the most common that I see and the most common that we end up working on. First, corporate boards and senior management are often clueless when it comes to understanding sanctions risks and the need for robust ethics and compliance mitigation. It took a long time for boards and senior executives to understand the need for anti-corruption compliance and FCPA compliance, and we are not very far down the learning curve on sanctions compliance. Second, companies have failed to unravel and understand the significant third-party risks created by distributors resell products to prohibited customers or end users. Just like FCPA risks, third-party violations are relatively easy for DOJ to establish for sanctions violations, since companies rarely undertake measures to track where their products go and who is using them. Companies are quickly embracing end-user certificates and traditional end-user documentation to try to button up this issue. Third, companies need to conduct supply chain audits to understand where they are sourcing materials and products. Stakeholders in the European Union are pushing companies to undertake robust supply chain audits to uncover serious risks, such as modern slavery, human trafficking, and sanctions violations. In the U.S., OFAC already has pushed this same requirement for companies, but few, if any, have embraced the need for supply chain audits as a means to mitigate sourcing and sanctions risks. Fourth, companies need to build a basic set of internal controls to ensure that sanctions issues are identified, escalated, and properly reviewed and resolved. This is not such a difficult task, but companies have failed to implement basic escalation controls to ensure the proper review by an additional person and the proper documentation and resolution of red flags. And fifth and finally, OFAC has stated that companies should conduct training annually for those responsible persons. Unfortunately, few companies have satisfied this requirement, and actually I'm finding few companies are even aware of this requirement, even though it's clear in the OFAC guidance. It is so basic and so obvious, but for some reason, companies have ignored or forgotten this basic requirement, and it's easily completed with a once-a-year program that for training on OFAC sanctions that is conducted just for those responsible persons, not everybody in the company, but responsible persons, people who are going to come in contact with the issue. Well, that's a quick review of the coming sanctions storm, enforcement storm, and stay in touch. And if you need any assistance in this area, please reach out to us at mvolkoff@volkofflaw.com. And we'll be here to help you and get you through the next coming year, which is going to be a tough one with regard to sanctions enforcement.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkofflaw.com.